hospitals. Among its findings, that these CEOs saw their pay rise an average of 18% from 2006 to 2009, while overall, New Hampshire wages grew by just 5%. The research was done by the New Hampshire Center for Public Policy Studies, but it was requested by the Attorney General's office, which wanted to see whether these executives' generous take-home pay was in keeping with their institution's nonprofit status and charitable missions. Studies' answers were somewhat inconclusive and have been interpreted differently by different people, but they did set off, once again, a conversation about CEO pay, especially in the tax-exempt nonprofit sector. Today in The Exchange, we dive into this conversation, and let's hear from you. Should the heads of these hospitals be paid well, given the complexities and importance of their institutions? How does their nonprofit status change that equation, in your opinion? And how connected is health executives' pay to the overall quality of care and the rising cost of care? Give us a call, the Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR, or send us a short email, the address exchange@nhpr.org. We have three guests for the hour with us in studio: Steve Onan, president of the New Hampshire Hospital Association, which represents 32 hospitals in the Granite State, most of which are nonprofit. And Steve, nice to see you. Thank you for being here.
Good morning.
Also with us, Daniel Barrick, deputy director at the New Hampshire Center for Public Policy, which conducted the study I mentioned on hospital CEO pay. And Dan, good to see you too.
Hi, Laura.
And also with us, Anthony Blenkinsop, senior assistant attorney general and director of the Charitable Trusts Unit. And Anthony, nice to meet you and thank you for your time this morning.
Thank you. Good morning, Laura.
Well, and Anthony, I want to start with you. Why did the AG's office feel it was important to study this particular issue of nonprofit hospital CEO pay?
The Charitable Trust Unit at the Attorney General's Office oversees and regulates all charitable nonprofits operating in the state of New Hampshire. And in 2009, two nonprofit hospitals, Dartmouth-Hitchcock and Catholic Medical Center, were looking into a possible affiliation, a merger in essence. And under state law, as their nonprofit hospitals, they need to submit their proposed affiliation to the Attorney General's Office for review and approval. As part of that review, the Attorney General noted the salary of the then CEO of Catholic Medical Center and that it appeared to be significantly higher than her contemporaries. As a result of that, in 2010, the Attorney General felt it was appropriate to conduct a study to look into the salaries of nonprofit hospital CEOs to determine the levels of salaries, but also the processes by which boards were setting those salaries. And that's what led to the report that was issued earlier this month.
And again, the reason we look at nonprofit, not for-profit salaries is because nonprofits, A, have a charitable mission, and B, have tax-exempt status.
That's right. So, you know, they have a charitable mission. They're given certain benefits. The tax-exempt status is obviously the biggest. And as a result of those benefits, they're expected to do certain things, abide by their charitable mission, provide community benefits. And in that regard, the Charitable Trust Unit is there to ensure that entities, nonprofits, abide by their charitable mission and to ensure that assets of nonprofits are directed towards that charitable mission.
Well, Dan, your organization did the work requested by the Attorney General's office. Lots of information in this report, but what really jumped out at you, Dan, from it?
Well, we had two major goals with this work. One was simply to provide a data foundation for in this area. Oftentimes when the topic of hospital CEO compensation is discussed, an individual hospital's CEO's pay is reported, but often in isolation. So simply to provide the context for how they relate to each other, how they relate to the rest of the region. And two, our second goal was to help attempt to enrich the public discussion by raising the question of the value that hospitals provide to the community and how that relates to how their top executives are compensated. And with those goals in mind, our findings included the following. One, the majority of hospitals in New Hampshire do follow the process outlined by federal regulators for setting compensation, including using independent boards and comparable data. Two, that compared to the rest of the state workforce, as you mentioned at the onset, CEO pay, executive pay at nonprofit hospitals has increased at a higher rate in the period we looked at, 2006 to 2009. That compared to, we also looked at the rest of New England, the new nonprofit hospitals throughout New England, and that by and large, there's great variation, but by and large, it appears that New Hampshire appears to be in line with regional trends in terms of levels of pay and rates of increase. And finally, And again, there's great variation. It's hard to describe the entire hospital sector in New Hampshire in with a broad brush. But there's great variation in pay. But the most consistent indicator we found was simply the size of the hospital's budget. So larger hospitals tend to pay more, smaller ones don't. It kind of relates to our goal regarding the value that hospitals provide, the quality of the care, the cost of the care, and the charitable mission that they provide to the public. That's the question we were trying to elevate. What is that relationship? What should it be? What does it exist now? And how can board members at hospitals, regulators, lawmakers, and the general public how should they think about that?
So the question really, lots of questions, but one of the ones it seems like you were honing in on, Dan, is does higher executive pay mean better outcomes, meaning better quality of care, also the relationship between the cost of care?
Exactly.
Right. Well, Steve Onan, of course you want to get in on this. And just first, your broad reaction to what's been some negative outcry on this, that super high hospital CEO salaries are out of line with what are supposed to be nonprofit institutions.
Well, Laura, I think, you know, not-for-profit hospitals and the volunteer men and women who serve on hospital boards in New Hampshire take their roles and responsibilities and obligations very, very seriously. They have a charitable mission, and their goal is to ensure that everything that institution does is in the best interest of the patients and communities who depend on them. And that goes for every decision that they make, whether that's the level and type of services that they provide, the facilities that they operate in, the doctors and nurses and other caregivers who provide that care, the ability to provide services to all in their community without regard to their ability to pay, as well as the compensation that they pay to their chief executives. And I think, you know, this report will serve as an important benchmark for hospital boards as they conduct those duties now and in the future. And I think, as Dan noted, it's important to recognize that, as the report does, the hospitals in New Hampshire are complying with federal rules and regulations relative to these. There have been a couple of areas that have been pointed out that I think are important, and as I understand, the Attorney General's offices are already begun to follow up with those institutions to ensure that they are in compliance with federal regulations. That's important. And then lastly, the salaries that are being paid, when you look at peer organizations around New England for CEO pay for similar organizations, hospitals in New Hampshire are being paid very much at, in many cases, below their peers in New England, as well as northern New England and just Maine, New Hampshire, and Vermont. So, again, we think it's an important benchmark, and we look forward to the conversation.
So their peers, does that mean at other major charitable institutions or their peers in the private sector?
It looks at their peers across New England, so hospital executives in both not-for-profit as well as for-profit hospitals, because that's the market from which hospital boards will draw executive talent. And it's not just from hospitals, but when if a hospital CEO were to leave an organization and that board would look to hire a new executive, they would look internally, but they would also look regionally and nationally to find the best individual that they can to lead that very complex organization. These are large organizations, hundreds of millions of dollars, if not billions of dollars in annual revenue. They employ hundreds, if not thousands, of employees. The complex nature of healthcare, and we've talked about this many times before, the changing nature of the healthcare delivery system is significant, and the tremendous amount of risks that they take. But absolutely, the focus on doing the best for that community, ensuring that the health of the community is improving, that they're providing benefits to the community, that everything that they do is in keeping with their charitable mission to serve those patients and communities who depend on them.
I think what bugged people, Steve, about this report is that, A, nonprofit hospitals don't pay taxes, and B, the idea that, you know, for people who are paying so much money for health care, to see hospital executives make what feels like to some an exorbitant salary, it seems like, well, gee, could they lower the salaries and help reduce my cost of care? You know, I mean, I know it's not that direct a link, but I think it bugs people to see this.
Look, there's no question that, you know, the healthcare system is challenged, and we need to find ways to reduce the cost of healthcare to ensure that patients are getting better outcomes and better care in the right place at the right time every time. And hospitals are doing that, and I'd be happy to share some of the work that's going on relative to that. But, you know, again, when you look at the cost of healthcare, and Dan can speak to this because they did the study, when looking at the what those salaries represent in terms of costs at those institutions. They're a very small percentage of the overall revenues of the organization. And again, we want to find the best executives that we can to run these organizations. These are very complex and complicated institutions that are only becoming more complex by the day. And the risks that are involved in making decisions that affect thousands of employees, tens of thousands of community citizens in terms of the benefits and services that they can offer, those are significant challenges. You know, you talk about the fact that many hospitals don't pay taxes. Some hospitals do. They make payments in lieu of taxes. Those are decisions that are made at the local level, and we think that's the right place for those. But if you look at the charitable care that hospitals provide, it represents about 10% of our net operating revenue that is given away for patients who don't have insurance, for some patients who have insurance and simply can't pay their portion of the bill. That's known as bad debt. That's been going up significantly over the last several years as we've faced this economic decline, as health insurance policies have changed. And that's a significant aspect of what hospitals do. But it's not the only thing that hospitals do in terms of providing benefits, outreach, other work that they do to ensure that patients who don't have access to care otherwise certainly do.
All right. And after a short break, we'll talk some more. I also want to follow up on what you talked about, Steve. Outcomes, the connection between executive pay and outcomes, meaning the cost of care, the quality of care. We'll take your calls, too. So let's hear from you at 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR, or send us a short email, the address exchange@nhpr.org, and we'll be right back.
This is NHPR 919. Good morning. More on executive salaries at the state's nonprofit hospitals coming up on The Exchange. And at 10 o'clock on The Diane Rehm Show, a conversation with U.S. Senator Marco Rubio of Florida. New Hampshire weather for today, turning partly to mostly sunny and less humid than it has been. Today's highs from 75 degrees from the White Mountains north and along the seacoast, around 80 degrees for the Upper Valley, Merrimack Valley, Monadnock region, and Lakes region, and about 85 degrees in Hillsborough County. Support for NHPR comes from UR members, and support also comes to us from the NEEF Network Organizations, a statewide leader assisting students and parents planning for college. Information at nhheaf.org. And Vineyard Brands, importers of Marcos de Caceres wines from the Rioja region of northern Spain. Information at vineyardbrands.com. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Canoy. Today in The Exchange, we're addressing the salaries of executives at New Hampshire's nonprofit hospitals, given a recent report finding that CEO pay rose by an average of 18% in recent years, a far greater increase than wages in the private sector. We're looking at these numbers and whether they are in line or out of line with the charitable mission of these nonprofit hospitals. Join us 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Should the heads of these hospitals be paid generously, given what one of our guests calls the enormous complexities and importance of these institutions? How do you think their nonprofit status should change that salary equation, if at all? Join us, 1-800-892-6477, email exchange@nhpr.org. And before we go to our listeners, gentlemen, Anthony with the Attorney General's Office, I did want to ask you about something that seems to me to be very important that this study looked at, and that is CEO pay linked to better outcomes at hospitals? Outcomes meaning, is the quality of care better? Is the cost of care lower? How closely are these salaries linked to good outcomes at these facilities?
Yeah, I think that was one of the interesting things that came out of this report, is that at least on the information that was provided by the hospitals for the period under review, it appeared that there wasn't any necessary direct link in the quality of care, the cost of care, charitable care, to the amount of salary of the CEO of that particular institution. So obviously, from our perspective at the Attorney General's office in regulating nonprofits, we want to see nonprofit boards, when they're discussing these issues, ultimately setting CEO compensation. We think these are key factors that should be considered. And to the extent they have been considered in the past, at a minimum, the minutes and records should have a greater reflection that they were considered. But at least in the information provided, there didn't appear to be a link.
Can you give us a little more on that, Dan Barrick? No direct link between the quality of care or the amount of charity care at these hospitals.
Well, it's certainly a significant issue and one that's quite complicated and difficult to measure. We chose a couple of measures, as you mentioned, the quality of care as measured by a number of factors, patient surveys and the hospital's success in treating certain kinds of conditions, and price of care, how hospitals compare to statewide average in terms of the price charged for certain procedures, and charitable, the amount of charitable care provided to those who can't afford to pay. And, you know, our goal, as I said, was simply to raise these as questions. And we didn't find any obvious link. It was a relatively straightforward and simple analysis we used. But I think, you know, if we're interested in providing high-quality, low-cost care with a significant community benefit component, it seems reasonable that hospitals, as charitable trusts and their CEOs, should be held accountable to those goals by the community. And this is just one measure. There's a lot of tools that are out there that we can use to hold them accountable. But the question of value, the value that the hospitals provide to the community, is one that we feel we wanted to put on the table with this report.
And Steve, I want to go to you too, but another question for you, Dan. So did you find that high pay for an executive at a hospital doesn't reduce the amount of charity care that hospital does? So maybe, I guess what I'm trying to infer here is maybe high pay isn't really such a problem as long as that charitable mission is being taken up and continued.
Well, we look for this one measure, we looked at 1 year of charitable care, the most recent one available reported by the hospitals. And what we found was no obvious link, even when accounting for the size of the hospital, that larger hospitals pay higher salaries because they have bigger budgets. No obvious, clear, strong relationship between the two.
What do you think, Steve? High pay, better outcomes? Yes or no? Are you getting your money's worth?
Absolutely. I think the issue of outcomes is one that's very important. And I think it's one that hospital boards do look at when assessing the performance of the organization as well as the CEO. And just, you know, one point that I wanted to raise, we talk about quality, and New Hampshire hospitals have done a tremendous job improving quality health care for their patients. And as measured by some federal measures that have been collected for over a decade, New Hampshire's actually been leading the nation in these measures for Medicare patients around patients who suffer from heart attack, heart failure, pneumonia, and those undergoing surgery in the hospital. So in great measure, New Hampshire hospitals are providing high-quality care. But the important note is that our scores didn't always rise to the level that they are today, well above the national average. And in fact, we know that those measures were things that individual hospitals were looking at when they evaluated their CEO, how their performance was tracking. Were they moving up? Were they getting better than their peers? Were they getting better than the national average? So I think, again, the notion of connecting all of this to performance and outcomes is absolutely the right thing. And I think it's absolutely what hospital boards are looking at, and how can we make that more publicly available and transparent.
I want to bring another voice into our conversation. Joining us now on the phone is Mary Ellen Jackson, Executive Director of the New Hampshire Center for Nonprofits. And Mary Ellen, thanks for taking the time. Good morning.
Good morning, Laura. Glad to be here.
Well, you wrote a letter to the Concord Monitor recently, getting involved in this issue that we're talking about today, saying that the nonprofit sector of the 21st century is a far cry different than that of our great-grandparents' generation. What were you trying to say there, Mary Ellen?
Well, you know, often we forget that nonprofit organizations have really stepped to the plate over the last 20 years, and especially in the last 5 years. You know, as the government funding has receded, philanthropy is down by 25%, and yet needs are way up. And the nonprofit sector is stepping to the plate to deal with a whole wide variety of issues, from climate issues to poverty to, you know, our communities and how are they going to be strong and economically vibrant. So the nonprofit sector is dealing with a variety of very complex issues that, you know, we want strong leadership if we're going to have world-class museums like the Courier in New Hampshire that draws tourism, or we're going to have a brain injury hospital like Crotchet Mountain offers. We need talent and we need overhead. You know, business has long known this, that to be effective requires appropriate and reasonable salaries, and you've got to retain talent to do these jobs.
Well, no one would say, of course, that hospital executives, you know, need to starve or live in grass huts. But at what point, Mary Ellen, do salaries become unseemly for institutions that are supposed to plow any leftover money, you can't call it profit, but any leftover money back into their charitable missions and not into, you know, their executives' bank accounts?
Well, I think it's the, you know, you have to look at the role of the board. And I think, you know, the question is for the community board to look at. And the requirements of the IRS are actually quite detailed. You have to fill out your Form 990, and that means you're articulating that there's no conflict of interest, that there's been a compensation study, that there's documentation of the board's deliberate action in setting the compensation. You know, of course, like any other industry, there will be cases of excess. But by and large, and I think the study that the Public Policy Center did, again, it said by and large, everything was in line, and the organizations had followed all the IRS rules. So I think the question is, you know, it's a question for the board of directors of nonprofits to wrestle with. I think they take these decision-making very seriously. The real challenge in the nonprofit sector has been for decades under compensation and very fragile overhead. And this has led to a world of challenge. And so we're in this major transition in the nonprofit sector where outcomes and measurement and effectiveness and strong salaries are needed. So I can't speak to there's such a small case of excessive salaries from what we've seen in New Hampshire. You know, nationally, of course, the spotlight has been put on those cases. But again, by and large, the entire sector is facing a different challenge.
You know, when you talk, Mary Ellen, about following the rules, and others have mentioned that in studio, that, you know, no hospital in New Hampshire tried to sneak around with this or not follow the IRS procedures. But what do you think, Mary Ellen? It still doesn't sit right with a lot of folks who are paying a lot of money for care, who are paying property taxes while nonprofits are tax exempt in general. It just doesn't sit right with people to see, you know, huge salaries at some of these institutions. You know, whether they follow the rules or not, I don't think that's really what people are focusing on.
Well, again, I think it it is, by and large, you have to look at the complexity of the organizations. And if it doesn't sit right with them, then they should contact that board. But I do think we in New Hampshire have a very strong charitable unit under the Attorney General's office that regulates this. And I think, again, by and large, you know, nonprofit salaries across the board, all executives, in our studies, and we do a bi-yearly survey, a salary survey, and the salaries have crept up, if not stalled over the last 5 years. The average is a 2% cost, less than cost of living raise for most executives. So I think it's a case of an individual, one or two hospitals. I think overall the report, again, documented the complexity of the work and the variations. And, you know, sometimes you look at these studies or you take a look at some of these watchdog organizations, and interestingly enough, they will say the organization's fragile financially or that the organization is overpaying its leadership, but you need to get in and look at the organization. You have to see what it's accomplishing. Some of these hospitals, especially in the North Country, are accomplishing amazing feats every day to just keep their doors open.
Mary Ellen, one last question for you, if I could. Are you concerned, again, as the head of the New Hampshire Center for Nonprofits, that these salaries might place hospitals in some communities under scrutiny for their tax-exempt status, that people might say, well, gee, if you can afford to pay your top leaders this much, you can afford to pay taxes?
Well, again, many of the hospitals are paying payment in lieu of taxes, and we have to also remember there's a variety of, you know, they're employing, and the nonprofit sector employs 1 out of 7 people. So the issue of property taxation is one that nonprofits earn. You know, if you're clearly demonstrating a charitable good to people in your region, then you've earned the tax-exempt status, and that is counteracted by your efforts to serve all of those who cannot afford to pay. So this is a long-held tradition in the nonprofit sector. Again, some institutions are recognizing that they their board goes into deliberations and decides to pay a payment in lieu of taxes. That's an individual decision. Overall, most of the organizations have met the criteria and deserve the tax deduction.
Well, Mary Lynn, and I thank you very much for joining with
us today. My pleasure.
All right. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
That's Mary Lynn Jackson, Executive Director of the New Hampshire Center for Nonprofits. Our number for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. And Dan Barrick, Steve Onan, Anthony Blankensup, let's go to the phones now. And Dave's waiting in Hopkinton. Hi, David. Go ahead. You're on the air. Thanks for being with us.
Sure. Thanks for taking the call. Just to further on the question of whether or not hospitals pay taxes, I think that's a choice that we've made in New Hampshire, that we don't have a tax base that's supported at all by an income tax. If 1 in 7 paid workers are paid by hospitals or healthcare, and we collected some kind of income tax, wouldn't hospitals then be contributing more to the tax base? I think it's not really fair to say that hospitals don't pay taxes. They collect taxes, and what about CEOs of pharmaceutical companies and insurance companies, although they're not for profit? Monies that we pay towards healthcare go to those individuals in large sums. Does that improve healthcare? It's a good question.
So, David, is your point that these salaries make sense to you, given the contributions of hospitals to our community? Or I'm not really sure where you're going with this.
Yeah, I think it's the whole reason that this became highlighted in the media was because outraged that hospitals aren't paying taxes because they're not for profit.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't judge whether the salaries are too high. It sounds like from the research done that they're in line with other people in similar positions. If you're the CEO of an organization that has 3,500 employees, as might be the case in a hospital, that's a tremendous amount of responsibility and span of control. And are you going to find somebody for $100,000 who can do that job? I don't know.
All right, so, David, thanks for calling in. And what about the nonprofit status, Anthony? I mean, this is what inspired the Attorney General's office to study this issue, partly because of the nonprofit status and the charitable mission.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, it's the nonprofit status that brings it under the purview of the Attorney General's office and the Charitable Trust Unit. And ultimately, our objective is just to ensure that, again, charitable assets are directed for the charitable purpose. In that context, the IRS prohibits excessive compensation of executives or employees at charitable nonprofits. And so that's the context in which this study was done is, what is excessive compensation? Is excessive compensation being paid? And, the IRS prohibits excessive compensation but doesn't really define what exactly that means.
Well, that was my next question. And so, how do you define that?
And so what it leaves us with is this rebuttable presumption that is talked about in the report and that we've talked a bit about today, which basically says the presumption will be the compensation is not excessive or is reasonable if the hospital or the nonprofit hospital or any other nonprofit satisfies these three criteria. It's approved by the board of directors. They rely on appropriate comparable data, and they ultimately document the process used through meeting minutes. And so, we wanted to see exactly what process in satisfying that rebuttable presumption, what these hospitals were doing. And I think that's where a lot of the interesting information in this report comes out in terms of what information are they considering in setting these salaries? What comparable data are they relying on? So those were the important issues to us, the lack of at least a link in this report with quality of care, cost of care, charity care, the fact that while the hospitals appear to meet the rebuttable presumption when it comes to base salary or wages, there's not specific evidence that they satisfy the rebuttable presumption, when it comes to other forms of compensation, such as retention bonuses, annual bonuses, different perks that oftentimes form a high percentage of a CEO's compensation. So again, I think it's important that it starts a dialogue that we want to have with the hospitals and ultimately the boards, that they should be considering all these issues when they set CEO compensation, that they should be having this process for all forms of CEO compensation to ensure that it's going through a deliberative process and ultimately being set by the board that's ultimately accountable to the community that these hospitals serve.
Now, you mentioned a couple times rebuttable presumption. Just remind us what that is, Anthony.
Sure. So that's what the IRS says. If the hospitals or a nonprofit satisfy those three criteria, the presumption is the compensation is not excessive. It's a presumption. It can be rebutted, but it's then the burden on the regulator, generally the IRS or potentially a state regulator like the Charitable Trust Unit, to demonstrate that the compensation is excessive.
Well, and here's the question. If the Attorney General's office, your unit, especially the Charitable Trusts Unit, you know, adds additional requirements or lots of scrutiny to this process, deciding how much nonprofit hospital CEOs should be paid, do you put New Hampshire hospitals in a, well, in a difficult competitive position? I'm a great CEO and I'm thinking about moving to New England, but you know, New Hampshire, this is just getting kind of difficult. And I think I'll just go to Maine or Boston.
I don't think we do. I mean, I think ultimately it's just about its transparency and public disclosure and having a process by which boards are considering all of these important factors in setting compensation. And what we want to make sure is that boards don't merely rely on sort of looking at comparable data from other hospitals in northern New England or New England and targeting a certain percentage that their CEO should make based on salaries at hospitals throughout New England and saying that's an appropriate salary. That's what we talked about, I think, in coming out of the report, is sort of a log rolling effect, that you see these salaries rising over the 5-year period under review 18%, when general wages for the same period were rose at 5%. We want to bring some other factors in consideration. I don't think that ultimately is going to be a problem for hospitals. I just think it makes it ultimately a better run board.
Okay. We will talk a lot more after a short break and take more of your calls. David, thank you for that one. 1-800-892-6477 is our number here on The Exchange. Email is exchange@nhpr.org, and we'll be right back.
Past early bird winners of NHPR's summer car raffle did pretty well with $2,000 worth of gas gift cards from Irving Oil.
My son and daughter-in-law, they easily got a couple of months out of their cards, and ours lasted 4 months.
I was able to use that gas card from July through the middle of November.
For 11 months, we have not paid for gas.
How far would they take you? One way to find out is to get your $50 raffle tickets at nhpr.org by August 4th.
This is NHPR, where support comes from UR members and from New England College in Henniker, celebrating a tradition of creativity and achievement in writing and the visual arts. Information at nec.edu. And the Scott Lawson Companies, protecting your company's most valuable asset, your people, through workers' comp, wellness, and health and safety services. HealthierWorkers.com. Good morning, it's 9:40. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, the salaries of New Hampshire nonprofit hospital CEOs and why they've stirred up some controversy lately. Join us with your questions and comments, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Should the heads of these hospitals be paid generously, given the complexities and importance of their institutions to their communities? How does their nonprofit status change that equation, if at all? How connected do you think health executive pay is to the quality of care and to the cost of care? How much should those factors weigh in when it comes to determining executive pay? Call us, 1-800-892-6477, or email exchange@nhpr.org. And gentlemen, I want to bring another voice into our conversation now. With us on the phone, Ken Berger, president and CEO of Charity Navigator, a nonprofit that evaluates charities to facilitate informed giving. And Ken, thanks a lot for your time. We appreciate you being with us.
Well, thank you for having me.
Well, we've talked a lot this morning about what's appropriate and what isn't for nonprofit salaries, especially in the case of hospitals, since that's what the study focused on. How do you decide what's appropriate or not?
Well, we based our analysis on a survey of mid to large size charities throughout the United States. And we find that the typical CEO salary for a mid to large size nonprofit is approximately $150,000. But we do find that in the case of nonprofit hospitals, in particular, the salaries are relatively off the chart. Salaries that get up to the $1 million range are, we often encounter that. And so the typical rules of what we see as best practice don't seem to work so well in the nonprofit hospital scenario. So in that case, we think that there's a need for the government to intervene in some way to better define how we operationally define a nonprofit hospital, because it seems that the normal best practice rules are not working there. Because our basic position is the notion that you are becoming a millionaire while you are supposed to be providing a public good, a charitable purpose, is sort of defies logic, we think.
Well, salaries off the chart, in your words, Ken. But I wonder, you know, we've heard from some of our guests that these are incredibly complex jobs, and you're, you know, working with hundreds, if not thousands, of employees. You're in charge of the lives, literally, of hundreds of thousands of people. So is it really fair to compare the salary of, you know, a major hospital in a city versus, you know, someone who runs a local soup kitchen? That's not a knock against the person who runs the soup kitchen, of course, but, you know, we're not talking apples to apples here.
Well, yeah, but I think that that takes it to the extreme, because I think that that fundamental argument, though, is a bogus argument. To say that the nonprofit hospitals are unique in their size and complexity within the nonprofit sector is ridiculous. There are many very large and complex nonprofits where the salary levels don't come close to the off-the-charts nature of the nonprofit hospitals. And so, the truth is somewhere in the middle. And to compare them to the vast majority of nonprofits where the CEO gets paid nothing or a pittance, because the typical nonprofit is has revenues about $50,000 a year, we're not talking about that. We're talking about organizations that could even be billions of dollars in size. They're that large, they're that complex, and yet we still don't see salaries approaching what these nonprofit hospitals are getting because of problems such as log rolling, and also because of the fact that in many ways they are mimicking the for-profit hospitals rather than truly providing the charitable purpose that they're supposed to have. So that we think is a real dilemma here, which requires additional clarification to make sure that they are truly providing that public good and distinctive from for-profit hospitals.
Yeah, and you're getting into something I wanted to ask you. You started to go there, but let's go there a little more, Ken. Why do you think these nonprofit hospital salaries are, in your opinion, out of line to the rest of the nonprofit world? You mentioned something called log rolling. We touched on that before, but can you just clarify, please?
Well, I think that essentially, in many ways, I think the IRS has recently did a study, or not that long ago, of nonprofit hospitals. And what really was striking was that in more ways than in many other cases of nonprofits, there are very few distinctions in various parts of the country between them and the for-profit hospitals, and that essentially the one critical difference is that the nonprofit hospitals seem to have a strategic advantage because of their not having to pay taxes. But otherwise, the salary levels, the amount of charity care is virtually very similar in many parts of the country to the for-profit hospitals. And so it seems to be a strategic business decision in many cases more than anything else, because in every other way it looks like a for-profit. So if it walks like a duck and it talks like a duck, what the heck are we doing here?
Well, is it possible that they are mimicking, as you said, the salary levels of for-profit hospitals because they're all trying to pull from the same talent pool?
Well, I do think that there's a fundamental premise here, which is the question of, if you work for a nonprofit, in virtually every other sector of the nonprofit world, it is understood that because you are serving a public mission and because you are doing something where all taxpayers are donating, in essence, because of your tax-exempt status, that it's understood that you are not going to be making the same salary that you would make in the for-profit sector. And so the argument here is, if it's the case that they have to compete for the same talent pool, then make it a for-profit hospital. Get it done. Get it over with.
Well,
why are we using tax dollars to support these institutions that show no distinction from their for-profit counterparts?
Just to wrap up with you, Ken, and again, I appreciate you being with us. You probably heard that New York Governor Andrew Cuomo is calling for caps on nonprofit salaries. I think it was $199,000. What do you think of that idea?
Well, personally, I think it's a terrible idea because it's sort of like you squeeze the bottom of the balloon and the top pops out. You've already discussed in your discussion here that you see that if you try to identify one scenario, then now there are all these other perks and these other unidentified compensation structures that go outside of it. That the government typically has a hammer where a laser may be required, and I think it's more rather than trying to cap the salaries, it's more about clarifying public purpose, public good, and what is your charitable requirements and the results of your work, which I think the study in New Hampshire also pointed to. Measurable results. Where is that? Where is the connection with measurable results?
All right. Well, Ken, thank you very much for joining us.
My pleasure.
That's Ken Berger, President and CEO of Charity Navigator, a nonprofit organization that evaluates charities. The number for you to join us here in the exchange is 1-800-892-6477. Real quick to you, Steve Anna, before we go to our callers, what about Ken's last point that, look, if you're going to pay people like a for-profit and act like a for-profit, why not just become a for-profit?
Well, I think hospitals are acting like hospitals, and hospitals are doing what they need to do to take care of their patients and their communities. And, as Mary Ellen talked about, the boards of these institutions run by volunteers from the community are responsible for ensuring that everything that they do supports and benefits that community. In fact, in New Hampshire, we actually have done really, really well, and I think could serve as a model for others in the country. We have a requirement, most states have requirements, that hospitals and charitable trusts do community needs assessments, that they work and partner with other agencies and organizations within the community to identify the needs and then find ways to serve those needs. And, we think that that's an important aspect. Those reports are made public. We've partnered with Anthony and his unit for a number of years to make sure that those reports are meeting the needs. And we think that's really important. So I think, again, if you look at the analysis that was done, salaries are in line, in fact, lower than some of their peers in other parts of New England. Lots of issues here, but transparency and accountability is absolutely essential. It's what defines hospitals and defines their work, and we look forward to the conversation as we move forward as hospitals do the important work that they do.
Well, and Dan, I'd like to ask you the same question that I asked Mary Ellen Jackson at the New Hampshire Center for Nonprofits. Will this study that you at the New Hampshire Center for Public Policy Studies did, might it bring increased pressure by communities on their local hospitals to start paying taxes, if not a payment in lieu of taxes, as some of them do?
Well, that's a good question. I think that discussion needs to be had first, the larger discussion about what the larger goals and expectations that the public should have. And, it's an interesting issue that what you and Steve are discussing about this, the pressure conflict between the for-profit and nonprofit industries, the question of who you should be comparing yourself to as an organization. It's one we didn't really delve into in detail here, but we think it's something that would shed further light on this topic. But, I think this whole question of excessive pay, defining excessive pay, it's not really one that can be answered by setting a specific dollar limit or a cap. I think the more fruitful discussion is one that might center on the question of what are the criteria and that we should use to evaluate hospital and CEO performance. What are the goals that the public should expect from these organizations, and how we reward those goals with pay, and what are the role that hospital boards, which are ultimately members of the community, and the ones responsible for these decisions, what role should they play in partnering with regulators about answering these questions and really trying to define define their goals?
Yeah, and that's another question that I had in my mind. I'm wondering if all this scrutiny, Dan, might make people less willing to join hospital boards.
Well, Steve could probably answer that. As we said in the report, hospitals are in New Hampshire often integral parts of their community economically. As an employer, they're cornerstones of their community in often parts, and I don't think that will change because of anything here.
Okay, Steve, you agree with that, real quick?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, let's go to another caller, and this is Renee waiting in Barnstead. Hi, Renee. Thanks for hanging on. You're on the air.
Hi, I had a question whether New Hampshire Hospital is under the same overall company as Concord Hospital? Because I know Riverbend Community Mental Health is under the same company as Concord Hospital. I believe it's called Capital Region Healthcare. But when I think of New Hampshire Hospital closing beds for seriously mentally ill people and Riverbend sending people who are a danger to themselves and others to Concord Hospital, and they sit in the hospital for two or three days because they can't get a bed that is safe for them, I am shocked by these salaries. And I think if they compare to other hospitals in New England, then they all should have some shame. But my initial question is the same overall company, does the same overall company own New Hampshire Hospital as well as Concord Hospital and Riverbend, which I know are owned by the same company?
Okay. Renee, thanks a lot.
The answer is no. New Hampshire Hospital is a state-owned facility,
yes.
And it's under the auspices of the Department of Health and Human Services.
What about the idea, and this may be turning her question around a little bit, Steve, but, you know, she said state cutbacks in mental health care are leading patients to be sitting in Concord Hospital's waiting room, and she disagrees with the high salaries. She seems to think that, as she said, they should have shame. You could also make the case, though, that, you know, state cutbacks have made things even tougher for hospitals and their CEOs.
They absolutely have. And on that very issue, we couldn't agree more in terms of the challenge that that's creating for community hospitals. For some patients who truly do need acute inpatient psychiatric care, there simply has been no room for them at the state hospital. And, you know, we see waiting lists of several days, and you end up with patients, whether it's Concord Hospital or any hospital across the state, for several days at a time. That's not the right level of care. And state cutbacks from Medicaid and Medicare at the federal level are certainly challenging us. Just in 2009, the last year for which we have data available, over $531 million in shortfalls of what it cost to provide services for Medicare, Medicaid, and uninsured patients was what hospitals received. That's a tremendous challenge, only making the job much more difficult.
Well, and here's another question, and this is for you, I think, Anthony. What about the idea that New York Governor Andrew Cuomo is proposing a cap on nonprofit salaries, $199,000? I mean, is that really what you're after with the AG's office, or do you just want more scrutiny, more thought into this process of how much nonprofit executives are paid?
Yeah, that, you know, that type of thing is nothing that we've suggested or said coming out of this report. I think what we're looking at is the idea that, and Dan touched on this well, I think, that we really want to see these boards of directors for hospitals, which ultimately are the entity making these decisions, we want to see them employing appropriate criteria, setting measurable goals by which they're going to measure their CEO, and then the process by which they're going to consider those criteria, those goals, and then setting the salary for the CEO and any other benefits that may form part of the CEO's compensation. So we're really focused at this stage on boards and boards developing best practices by which they set these CEO's compensation.
And are you saying the practices right now could be improved?
Well, I think so. I think what the report shows is that, at a minimum, the data that was provided shows that, you know, the one link we can show is that the bigger the hospital, the higher the salary.
And that seems to make sense, though. You're in charge of a bigger organization.
It may make sense, but I think then the lack of a definite connection between quality of care, charitable care, you know, patient satisfaction, cost of care, and the CEO salary is an area where we think there should be a greater link. We also want to see, again, the process used by the board in setting other forms of compensation, the different bonuses and other perks that a CEO may get. Again, from our perspective, I think it really comes down to a process issue and making sure boards are following the correct process in setting CEO salaries, because our hope, if they do, is that then we will get CEOs with non-excessive or reasonable compensation.
Reasonable being highly subjective, but we'll leave it at that.
It definitely can be, without a doubt.
So what's next for the AG's office in this then, Anthony? Are you kind of done looking at this issue? Or?
No, we're not done. I mean, I think the center, you know, has done an amazing job compiling data that the hospital's provided and issuing this report. I think this is something that, you know, we want to make sure that we're continuing to monitor yearly to ensure that there's current information out there for the public. We look forward to a dialogue with Steve and the Hospital Association in ways of developing best practices. is? How can we improve the process? And at the same time, you know, to the extent there are other ideas, whether they be legislative or otherwise, we're interested in discussing them. But again, we really think this was the start of a discussion that, again, a show like today is very helpful in moving forward.
Well, and if you want to look at the full study, we'll have a link on our website as soon as possible. You can also go to nhpolicy.org. And gentlemen, I want to thank all of you very much for coming in. Steve Onen, and thank you for being here. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Steve Onen, and president of the New Hampshire Hospital Association. Dan Barrick, thank you for your time.
Thank you, Laura.
Dan Barrick, deputy director of the New Hampshire Center for Public Policy, which conducted the study that we looked at. And Anthony Blankensop, thank you also for being here.
Thank you, Laura.
Anthony Blankensop, senior assistant attorney general, director of the Charitable Trusts Unit. The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our producer is Ellen Grimm. Our volunteer is Priscilla Malcolm. Our intern is Tim Camerato and Claudia Camerino. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The Exchange is now on Facebook. Become a fan of our Facebook page. We can learn more about upcoming shows and get extra links and materials. The Exchange executive producer is Keith Shields, and I'm Laura Kanoy.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you missed any part of today's program, listen to The Exchange anytime at nhpr.org.
I'm Laura Kanoy, and tomorrow on The Exchange, the transformation of Egypt and what may be ahead. We sit down with UNH professor Jeannie Sowers. The Middle East expert has co-edited a new book called The Journey to Tahrir. It's not just about the dramatic events of the Arab Spring in Egypt, but also those aspects of Egyptian government, culture, and economy that created the groundwork for the uprising. Email us at nhpr.org and join us for The Exchange tomorrow morning live at 9 and again at 8 p.m. on NHPR.